Welcome to Psych Gumbo, WTUL's mental health radio show for the New Orleans and Tulane community. I'm Dr. Holly Peek, the host of Psych Gumbo. Today's topic is all about therapy. Now, it is something a lot of people can benefit from, but it still remains mysterious to most. A lot of people avoid therapy because of stigma. They think that if they went to a therapist, it would mean that they were, quote, crazy. Or they just don't quite understand what goes on in the therapy room. So that is exactly what we are talking about today, demystifying therapy. To talk about this, today's guest is Dr. Arjun Rama. Dr. Rama is a third-year psychiatry resident at Yale School of Medicine. He also writes regularly about psychiatry in print and online. His work has been published in the New York Times Motherlode blog, Slate.com, and the New Haven Register, among others. In addition to his clinical work, he also teaches interviewing and writing skills to medical students in Yale's psychiatry clerkship. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and talking to us about this very important topic. Now, you approached me now a couple months ago at this point about talking about this. And what has made you so interested in this topic of therapy?
Well, it was actually psychotherapy that got me interested in going into psychiatry and working with people in general. I mean, I think there's something about the human relationship that I think leads to wellness. You know, certainly we have wonderful medications on the market, and we learn all about them in medical school and residency, but this is the element, I think, of the person to person that I think is really so fascinating, and how one person sitting in a room with another can be so helpful. That's what got me so excited about therapy.
Right. And it's always been interesting to me, you know, pharmaceutical companies have millions and billions of dollars behind them to advertise, but therapy doesn't. So a lot of people don't know what actually goes on in the therapy room.
Yeah. There's no, like, big therapy to match the big pharma. It's kind of sad.
Right. Well, that's what we're here to do today, to kind of demystify the therapy. So let's start off talking about, why are people so afraid or very wary of therapy? Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, I think that, and I know I felt this way probably before, you know, being a psych major in college and getting involved with this kind of stuff, but I think there was a sense that if you were in therapy, there must be something so deeply wrong with you, you know, on a really deep and horrible level or something like that. Like, it meant that you were crazy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think even using the term crazy is always unhelpful, actually, talking about mental illness. But do you know what I mean? There's a sense that if I go to therapy, there must be something very severe, let's put it that way.
Right.
And I think of it actually a lot more simply. I mean, I think of it as there's something you want to work on. There's something about the way that you do things and that you feel, I like the term or the statement, it gets in your own way. And you are trying to work with someone who's studied this stuff intensely, and you want to help yourself to not get in your own way.
Right. And sometimes it takes someone else to help, who has been trained, to help guide you through that. And something a lot of people, you know, aside from being afraid of having judgment cast upon you or fears of, you know, there may be something deeply wrong with you, people are scared of what actually goes on in the therapy room. I mean, sometimes you're telling your therapist something that you wouldn't even tell your spouse or your best friend. And it can be a little intimidating, for sure.
Yeah, and I can understand that, but it's one of those things that the first thing that any therapist that one might seek out, the first thing that you want to know about them is the confidentiality.
Mm-hmm.
And therapists come in all different stripes, which I think makes things even more complicated. So you know, you could go see a psychiatrist who's somebody who went to medical school. You could see a psychologist, someone who's, you know, been to graduate school in psychology. You could be seeing someone who's an advanced practice nurse or a social worker. So the one thing about all of those folks, and I've worked with them, you know, as a resident physician a ton already, is that they all live by the same creed, which is that this is all confidential. This is information that's used for you. In the same way that if someone was taking your blood pressure, that information to your cardiologist is confidential as well. It's not any different.
Right, exactly. Well, in order for us to, you know, kind of break down what actually therapy
is and what actually goes on in therapy, and it may make it seem a little less scary. I know you have a couple examples you want to give the listeners of different types of therapy that there are out there.
Yeah. I want to talk about a couple, and I picked a couple examples of therapies that are probably the most talked about and also the most different, so you can get a sense of the range.
Mm-hmm.
I think most people have heard of, or if you've heard about therapy, you've heard of cognitive behavioral therapy, and that's frequently shortened to CBT. And that's something that's it's actually right there in the title, cognitive being your thoughts, and then behavior being, you know, what you do. So the goals of it are essentially looking at how the way that we think affects our behaviors. And the idea being, well, if we can more realistically look at our world, then we can improve the way that we handle it.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as an example, like let's say we have a patient who comes in who says, you know, I feel like I'm the most horrible person in the world. And that patient will be working with a therapist to challenge what is clearly an irrational belief. The idea being that we're going to treat those thoughts, like let's say we take, I'm the most horrible person in the world. That's not a fact, that's a hypothesis, that's an idea. And
mm-hmm.
what we do in session and also during homework is to more realistically appraise the beliefs. So it's kind of asking a person to be like a scientist. You know, you look at something, the statement that you feel is true about yourself, and you have someone working with you to say, you know, who is also impartial, who can say, you know, is that realistic?
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you break it down even further, especially in CBT, by looking at what we call automatic thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm awful, I'm terrible, or this is going to be a disaster. Like if I'm talking about someone going to go public speak. And what you're doing with your therapist, you know, in the room, you know, with worksheets or exercises or at home, you're working with them to more realistically appraise these statements. And the idea is that if you can do that work over time, that you're going to improve the way you handle the world.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing about CBT is that it's short. It's time limited by definition, so it actually fits the managed care model pretty well.
Uh-huh.
Because I think if our listeners go out and try to link up with their insurance group, you're going to find that frequently 12 sessions is kind of the top for a lot of folks if you're going to get covered. So CBT usually fits within that model, and that model has been studied. It's great. It's been shown that CBT. When you do head imaging, even, you know, you'll see that there's actually different changes in brain activity. I guess that could probably seem kind of scary, but it's actually
but in,
you know,
a good way.
Yeah, exactly. It's changes in a way that are not with medications, especially for folks who have a sensitivity to them, either, you know, as far as not wanting to be on meds, or if meds just simply work for you. But speaking of meds, and this is, I thought, really interesting about some of the research, is that it's been shown to be as useful, CBT, as some of the antidepressants. But really, if you can combine the two, then you have even better combos, better outcomes for the combo.
Right. Well, that's great. And CBT is a very tried and true therapeutic method, and it can treat all sorts of things like depression, anxiety, PTSD, after traumatic experiences. It's a great model. And you also have an example from the other end of the spectrum. And it's sometimes what a lot of people think of when they think of therapy is psychodynamic therapy. So can you explain a little bit what that is?
Yeah. And I think that the way that you described it, Holly, is exactly it. It's psychodynamic psychotherapy is sort of the descendant from what's called classical psychoanalysis. So that's what people think about. Psychoanalysis is the, you know, 4 or 5 days a week with, you know, on the couch, and this was developed by Freud in the early 20th century. But what psychodynamic psychotherapy is I would say a bit more updated and more likely to be on the order of, you know, once a week kind of work. But the actual meaning of it is, it's similarly to CBT. It's right in the name. So psychodynamic, being the psychological forces and dynamic, you know, being the way that they move, the way that they drive our emotional suffering, you could say. Mm-hmm. So the goal kind of gets to the same thing as CBT. It's a relationship that you, as a patient, have with your therapist, and it's that relationship that's seen as a window into the way that you relate with others in your life. So it's less about symptoms, and I would say more an approach to leading a healthier and more fulfilling life.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I can imagine that seems kind of nebulous. So I think an example is probably indicated there. So if we took, say, a person who's, he's somebody who's always punctual. He's always on time for work. But he finds himself constantly canceling dates with women, and he feels like, this hesitation to go on dates and to get to link up is destroying the social life. And so let's say, you know, if he ends up going in and working with a psychodynamic psychotherapist, we could say that this is what the kind of work that they would do is to see how he relates to other people. So let's say the therapist sees that, you know, and interprets for him that, you know, getting into relationships brings out deep feelings of insecurity and fears of being rejected. And so in this way, there's an unconscious thing going on. It's like his canceling of these dates is this protective way to keep himself safe from having to face the risk.
Mm-hmm.
So that might seem a little far-flung, but the idea is that by bringing that that idea into awareness, by thinking about, like, whoa, you know, I'm tripping over myself here.
Mm-hmm.
He can recognize and work through those insecurities and the confidence issues, and the goal is, you know, similar to CBT, would be to then be able to move forward in his life.
Right. So more like a self-awareness of why you do what you do in order to fix things that just aren't working for you in life, basically.
Yeah, I mean, and Freud said it in a really simple way, it's the idea of making the unconscious conscious.
Uh-huh.
And the thing about it, though, is that it poses a couple problems from a practical standpoint. It's definitely more frequently open-ended time-wise, so it doesn't fit that 12 model we talked about before quite as frequently. There are brief psychodynamic psychotherapies, but frequently can go on, you know, far longer than 12.
Mm-hmm.
However, the research is still really reassuring as far as the effectiveness of the therapy. It's and indeed, it's one of the therapies that shows that the processes that occur during therapy seem to persist way longer than after the therapy is even done.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of comes back to what I said before, which is that this is a way of trying to achieve a healthier life, a healthier, more fulfilling life, you could say.
Right, and these two examples you've given, CBT and psychodynamic therapy, those are just two therapies among a bunch of them. And I'll put some resources on my website so the listeners can see, you know, and go research for themselves what type of therapy may work for them. But another aspect that is very important in therapy is shopping for a good therapist. You know, I feel like people may put more time and effort into shopping for a car or a TV than they do their therapist. And now these days, you know, people are doing a lot to shop for a hospital, shop for a surgeon, shop for a doctor. But people don't shop for therapists the same way. And I personally think that needs to change. You have to find the therapist that works for you. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It gets to some of the things that we talked about a minute ago about some of the practical aspects. I mean, we all have limited funds. We have limited
mm-hmm.
time. And we have a lot of pressures on us. So as far as shopping for a therapist, I think the first thing you have to make sure is, you know, are you going to use your insurer, if you have insurance, which many, many, many Americans unfortunately do not,
mm-hmm.
If you're going to use it, does your insurer cover the therapist that you're seeking out? Even if they do, you know, what's the copay going to be like?
Mm-hmm.
Because if the copay is unbearable and, you know, you're trying to work through problems that may go on for months and months, you know, it would be a shame, I think, to get started on a road that you really can't finish.
Right.
But a lot of this, I think, and actually maybe I should back up a second, because people are probably wondering, well, like, how do you get linked up with this at all?
Uh-huh.
I think that contacting your insurance if you're Blue Cross, they, you know, frequently will have a selection within your network, you know, in as far as people who are close to you, whether you're interested in working with a man or a woman or some of those demographic factors. But the thing I really want to get to about therapy in particular is when you're shopping is this sense of, you know, do I have an alliance with this person when I'm sitting in the room with them? You know, do I feel heard? Do I feel as if this is someone who can help me? And those are things that I think, there's really no great description or bullet points I can give. I think it's much more, you know, the sense that you get about it, about the person who's across from you. Now, the shopping aside, I think that there is an element about psychotherapy in particular that is really not that unnameable quality, which is the relationship you have with the person who's sitting across from you. And I think that medications and psychiatry are really, really amazing and have really helped a lot of people and continue to. But I think this is a pretty unique experience, particularly in a culture in which we spend a lot of time staring at phones and screens, that this is the part of the old psychiatry that really evolves to people in a room having to interact. And I think there's something amazingly human about it and therapeutic.
Absolutely. And you know what? We're going to go ahead and end on that point. I think that is a great point you just made. And in a time that we are so connected to people through electronics, there's a lot that can be said about sitting with a therapist in a room and working through your issues that way. So I thank you. Thank you so much for joining me today. This is all very helpful, and I hope the listeners enjoyed it too.
Thank you so much, Ellie.
All right. You have a good day.
Well, that's all the time we have today. Thanks again to Dr. Arjun Rama for being our special guest. For more information, make sure to check out my website at www.psychgumbo.com and follow me on Facebook and Twitter. This is Psych Gumbo. I'm Dr. Holly Peake for WTUL News. I hope everyone has a fantastic day.